I came back to Ottawa and the Ottawa Valley. I'd been gone for 25 years. I didn't know I could be anywhere for 25 years. I didn't feel that old. But when I came back, I had a few astonishing experiences. I took my car in to have it serviced, and the fellow who drove me from the Toyota place back to the school where I was working said to me, "Brett's laugh. Do you know Lauren and Joanne?" I said, "Well, yes, they're my cousins. They live in Iron Prairie." "Yes, I know. I was at a party with them last night." "Great people." I said, "Yes, yes, they are." About 2 days later at the school, someone was visiting, and they said to me, "Brett's laugh. Wait, that's Shawville, isn't it?" And I said, "Yes, yes, it is." I was feeling a little creeped out by now. And the third thing finally happened. Someone came to me and said, "Brett's laugh, who were your parents?" I said, "Marion and Carmen." And they said, "Ah, yes, Marion and Carmen. Good," and walked away. It was uncomfortable for me because for 25 years I'd been anonymous. I had moved from place to place and stayed in places for some long periods of time, but no one knew me when I got there, and they only had me to deal with, not my family, not my relations, not anyone. I was just me, secure, I thought, in who I was. And so to be confronted by all of this history all around me, all of a sudden when I came back, I found that not only was I back, I was placed and grounded and found. Identity is not something personal that we think we just create or develop on our own, that we can be proud of all by ourselves. It's unavoidably rooted in our relationships. Father of, sister of, cousin of, friend of, daughter, grandmother, all of those relationships in our lives. And almost everything we say about ourselves in some ways relates to those people who have helped form our identity. Well, in Genesis today, we hear about Adam and Eve. And they're invited by the serpent to craft their own identity. They're invited to have a relationship independent of God. When you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Well, who needs to be like God when you can be God all on your own? What a great identity opportunity to build yourself up, to be as good as you think you can be. Their identity as beloved children of God is called into question, and their confidence in God is undermined. And we know the rest of the story. They end up defining themselves not only against God, but against each other. What a very human thing to do. And then today in Matthew, we hear from the devil, who offers Jesus the promises of power. But every offer begins with an attempt to undermine Jesus' relationship with God. Three times the devil says, "If you are the Son of God, then." If you are. Jesus' identity is called strongly into question, the identity he was given at his baptism. "This is my Son with whom I am well pleased." And it's challenged his relationship with God. But unlike Adam and Eve, Jesus relies on that very relationship that's called into question to deter temptation. And he doesn't give in to it. He'll be content, as others are, to be hungry, dependent on God's grace to feed him. He'll be at risk and vulnerable, as others are, finding safety in God's promises. And he'll refuse to define himself or seek power apart from his relationship with God, and worship only God. Jesus provides for us an example to rely on that which we are asked to forsake, to not give in to the tempter, but to rely on our relationship with God. Now, every day, we're tempted to forsake ourselves and God. You might have noticed the advertising in society that focuses on our sense of lack, our insecurity, our inadequacy. Your teeth aren't bright enough. You are definitely not skinny enough or fit enough. You're not rich enough. You don't drive the right car. You're not well enough educated. And by the way, if you drink a certain beer, you'll have better friends. We are tempted to believe that we are not enough. Everything. I remember sitting on a ski trip a number of years ago with friends and some teenage girls, and they showed me their magazine they were reading. Reading would not be the word I would describe. There were not many words, there were lots of pictures, and every young woman I saw in that magazine did not resemble one person I had ever met. I had never seen anyone with that bright teeth, with that perfect body, with that shaped hair that didn't move in the wind that was being blown into it. That just wasn't real. And I thought, what about my teenage daughters? This is what they're trying to be, as I watched Vanessa brighten her teeth, fix her hair. And me too. We are tempted to believe we're just not good enough. And so we try to be so many things to so many people to prove that we are. We try to find ourselves and our way. Now, there was a time in my life when I was trying so hard. I was in university. I was trying so hard to fit in and to be everything to everyone and to be enough that I was desperately afraid all my friends and my family would meet at a party or perhaps at my funeral and start talking about me. And when they would do that, no one there would know the same person. One person would know the student who got good grades. One person would know the young woman who went partying every weekend. One person would know the kid that grew up on the farm. One person might know that she wanted to be a priest. One person, one person. And I was terrified that this identity would all come together at once. My funeral would be better because at least I wouldn't be there. But a party was very dangerous. And so I don't recall ever having all those people in one room at one time at that time in my life. Because when it happened, I didn't know who I was. Believing that lie, that by being myself I wouldn't be enough, scared the life out of me. So today we're offered an opportunity, and Lent offers us an opportunity, not just to think about how bad we are, which is often what you're told to do during Lent. Instead, I'd encourage us to think about who we are, our identity, our relationships, and that which forms us as people. To recognize that we're more than ourselves. Our family, and fortunately not just our family, shape us, because not all of us want our families to shape us as much as they might like. Our friends, our colleagues, the strangers we meet on the street when we leave the church this morning, the relationships that we form, no matter how brief they are, also help form our identity, because we must respond, and that calls something out of us. When I was having a really hard time as a teenager, I remember seeing a painting. Actually, it was a pen and ink drawing of a hand. It was a big, big, big picture of a hand sketched very clearly with kind of a weak-looking child sitting in the hand. I've never forgotten it because I remember thinking, that's me, weak, alone, looking afraid, being held in God's hand. But as I grew and matured, I realized sometimes I'm that hand, because sometimes I hold others who feel that way. And then I realized, and sometimes each one of us is the hand, but we are actually holding God for other people. We are enough. You're enough just the way you are, right this minute, today, sitting here in the church, thinking, sleeping, napping, whatever you're doing at the moment. You're enough. You don't have to do anything, become anything else. Your identity, formed by your relationships, informed by your choices, and always held in God's hand is enough. Enough to withstand the temptation, or at least to recognize the temptation to be something else. The temptation to try and strive to be someone you're not, even if that looks better. So take heart, hold a hand, be a hand, love yourself this Lent. Amen.